Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I'm excited today to be with David Hoffman. David and I have actually known each other many years, and I want to share with all of you listeners out there today who David is, and we'll talk a little bit why I've asked him to join us today, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So David is the founder and CEO of David Hoffman Realty, which is a Inc. 5000 company. He is also CEO of Covenant First Mortgage and Beyond Title. David Hoffman Realty is also a builder and developer services company and has a luxury division. David is consistently called on by local and national media for his expertise on real estate and economics, and his client list includes people of all walks of life. David actually gets to travel around the United States and Canada doing a lot of speaking, and he speaks to real estate conferences, mortgage conferences, and other business conferences, as well as churches and Christian concerts and music festivals. His conversations are on the value of relationships in our lives, reminding us that God gives us all the gifts and people we need to achieve our goals and dreams. David has a book coming out in the summer of 2023. It is called Relationships Over Rules, and I'm going to have you talk a little bit about that. David is married to a wonderful wife, Jessica, and has two sons, Cain and Knox, and lives in Union County. David Hoffman, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
It's great to have you. So in the context of our podcast here, which is really focused on helping companies build winning cultures, you and I recently had a discussion around the impact of relationships and the difference between what we'll call an authentic relationship versus transactional relationship. You're in the real estate business. Some might say, well, that's a transactional business. I think it's very fair to say, based on my own personal experience working with you and knowing you, you take a very different approach than that. And all of what you've learned and ultimately have been sharing with people is now being distilled down into a book, as I mentioned. So I'd love to actually talk a little bit about the genesis of that book and the principles that you're speaking to in that book, and really how you brought that into the daily lives of those people you serve in the real estate business.
Yeah, definitely, Tim. Just going back to that first point and comment about the transaction versus a relationship. It's kind of cliche, you know, it's not about the transaction, it's about the relationship, but there's more to it. People focus on the customer experience during the transaction. They think, well, I did a good job. I added value. I gave good service. And that's good, Tim. That is good. But what's great is when you do all the above outside of the transaction. Mm-hmm. When you care about someone so much, when you care about the relationship, that when there's no compensation, there's no consideration to receive, and you're still adding value. You know, for example, if you go to a hotel and you have a great experience, you may go back, you may not, but you paid your hard-earned money and you got really good service, maybe even great service. And that's a good transaction. That's a good experience inside the transaction. The relationship is when you hear from them a month later when they are sold out, but they care enough about you to let you know that they saved a room for your anniversary. You know, the relationship is you went to the restaurant and the waiter or waitress gave great service, but more importantly, they heard that you don't get a lot of time away from the kids. And it was the first date night in months. And so they reach out and they say, not only are we giving you a dinner on us, and it's not about the money, you know, one of our waitresses is off today, but she offered to be a babysitter. I've never experienced this, but this is what we hope to achieve and attempt to do in life at David Hoffman Realty. And just with my friends in general, Tim, I helped you and your beautiful bride many years ago sell a home, and now we're neighbors. And so I hope it was a good transaction, but more importantly, I appreciate the relationship, but there's nothing to gain, just friendship. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I meet regularly and we have coffee and there's no ulterior motive. I've actually asked you if you and your team can help my clients and it's going to happen, which would be great, but that's not what's most important to you either. It's about the friendship, not, so you walk the walk yourself.
Well, thank you. I am very curious if you're in a position willing to do so, maybe to talk a little bit about the book and kind of what led you to, you know, as I mentioned, you speak at a lot of conferences, you speak at different church events, Christian concerts, but I know you've got a big heart for Christ. And I know that the book is probably a combination of that, plus, again, what you've learned in business, which is an interesting intersection in and of itself. So,
yeah, definitely. You know, growing up like many, Tim, I faced a lot of adversity. There was a lot of neglect, some would say even abuse, not physical, but there was just a lot of loss. And there was a lot of time alone in my room where I couldn't go and eat. I couldn't go and have fellowship with friends. And so unbeknownst to me, relationships were becoming very valuable to me, mm-hmm. because they were so rare. You know, adversity gives us perspective, which is such a great gift, because without perspective, we don't have gratitude. And so for many years, many friends have said, you should write a book. You know, that's just kind of like what people do. But I always felt like it wasn't the right time. You know, I might be an okay writer. I'm not an expert writer. I might have a good story, but is it God's story? Is it a real testimony that can help? And then finally, a bunch of people that were successful authors said, you need to do this. And I was connected. And then they connected me with an agent. And long story short, my agent took a while before saying yes. Next thing you know, I had this best-selling writer to come beside me. And so at the end of the day, the book, my writer asked me, Tim, about 2 years ago in Franklin, Tennessee, do you want this to be a memoir? Do you want this to be a teaching book? And I said, yes. I said, I don't have the platform of a Tiger Woods where you give everyone over the holidays that loves golf the book to put on the coffee table to inspire them to be their best. I don't have a platform of someone to change the world, although I think we all can change the world. And so I thought, you know, there's four chapters. We need enough about the book to show, well, if David can do it, Tim, anyone can do it. So that's this four really raw, real chapters that I believe for the handful of people that read it so far, the manuscript, it'll encourage them that no matter what adversity you face, no matter what strife has been in your life as a child or even yesterday, your past does not dictate your potential. It does not define your purpose on this planet. Jeremiah 29:11 reminds us that he has a plan for us, and it's not for us to be harmed, but for us to prosper. And so we need to look forward. And so then after those four chapters, which are real and raw, you know, if the book ended there, hopefully it inspires, encourages people that they can do anything. But then there's seven principles, and there's more story in there. There's biblical story throughout the book, but there's more of the life story where I've learned from mistakes. The expert is not the know-it-all. The expert knows what they know, but they also know what they don't know. And so in 2 days now, I turn 43. So by the time people hear the podcast, I'll be an old man. I think I'm an old soul, but I've shared a lot of mistakes made, but then also some great stories. I can tell you a 20-second story.
Sure.
Okay, cool. So I had a great story in the book that I took out for an even better one. I had a great story of this very high-profile client that I helped them buy a good deal and then get out of the house at the peak and then move to another part of the country to realize another dream for them and their family. And this person's well-known and famous, and it was good. But then in March, a dear friend and real estate agent that has worked in our firm for many years was shot at 1:30 in the morning in gang shooting, and a bullet pierced a window in his apartment. And he had gone to see Batman with his older son, so he came home late. So his wife and daughter were in another room. Well, so he slept in his daughter's room. Long story short, the bullet came through the window where his daughter would have been, and he took it and he died. I opened the funeral a few days later, and I could not get through it without crying. I was hoping I could. But then I got back to my car and I was going through my trunk and just cleaning it out, Tim. And I came across a note. Now, 3 years earlier, before the pandemic, I spoke in Nashville, Tennessee, Tim, and the host asked my wife to ask half a dozen people in my firm to write why the relationship with me has impacted them, or how it's impacted them, why it matters. And this gentleman, Jimmy, wrote that he had lost his faith and that he's like, you know, I appreciate our relationship on many levels, and I'm paraphrasing, but more importantly, I found Jesus through our relationship. And I found it right after he was killed. So I sent it to his wife. I got permission from her and I asked my agent and writer. And so we put it in the book.
Oh, wow.
And it's just an example of, you never know. When I met him, he was not in real estate, but he wanted to get his license. When I met him, I was busy, you know, just the way the world says you're busy. Mm-hmm. But the relationship of the mutual friend, Tim, 10 years ago, I valued that friendship enough. There was no transaction. This person wasn't even in real estate. The other person had just bought a home. He didn't need anything, but he said, can you meet my friend? Well, I met his friend. He got his license. He got into real estate. He helped a lot of people in real estate. But more importantly, we became dear friends. And I hope that I showed him that there's more to life than this side. Mm-hmm. And so that's just an example of when you just leave room to receive God's blessings, he will use the people that are in your life. He'll use your spiritual gifts to change the world. I really believe that.
That's a powerful story, obviously. And that sad story in one sense, but I guess a good ending in the sense of being able to find out how he'd been impacted and ultimately saved through that experience. You know, as you think about, again, you're in the real estate business. There's a lot of people in the real estate business. I think you have made yourself distinct in a number of ways, but obviously the culture of the organization is one of those ways. I mean, as a leader, what are some of the areas of intentionality that you have focused on in the culture and the building of that culture and the fostering of that culture in your organization?
Yeah, definitely. And going back to the relationship over the transaction, mm-hmm. the rules say that someone has one skill set and that's their role. The rules say that depending on where someone came from, what their experience is, Tim, they're not able to do a role. I was told no so many times. One of the principles in the book is find a way to say yes. Mm-hmm. And that's different than saying yes to everyone. You want to please God, not people. When you say yes, you say no many times over.
Yeah.
But find a way to say yes. We can't do that today, but how about this tomorrow? If we can't do that, what if we do that this way? You know, try to find a way to collaborate. And so in our company, no one has a scarlet letter. No one has a label on them. No one wears a name tag. Everyone is empowered, I hope, to be anything they want to be. We always promote from within. Mm-hmm. We cast a vision, which sometimes is probably annoying because I tell people where we're going to be when we grow up. I always show 3 years out and then 3 minutes being present with you. Yep. So the culture is no one's ever surprised. Everyone has a seat at the table. If someone wants to be somewhere when they grow up, we probably already casted a vision where they fit into that. Nothing's behind closed doors. The books are open. The vision is open. And I hope that we, with some candor, don't get me wrong, we don't want to enable people. Mm-hmm. If they're not doing their job or reaching their potential, we're going to have a conversation. But we want it to feel like a real family. Tim, everyone says, oh, like, this is my work family. But it's the work family as long as results are there. I want to make it more of the grace-based organization where even if this week the results didn't show up, mm-hmm. it's already been done for you and we know your heart and we know we can get you there. And so I think that's the big difference is no one has a label on them of what is possible because anything is possible. And we try to show almost extra grace to not just talk the talk, but walk the walk, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously relationships being a critical component and to your point, beyond just the surface side of relationships, what I heard you say very much so is transparency and clarity of purpose, vision, where things are. But I also heard you say, David, that there's a focus on really identifying people's unique gifts and talents and not, in essence, putting them in a box, telling them they can't do something, but finding ways to get to a yes.
Absolutely. And one more thing I didn't share is foundationally, we have a culture committee. So the foundation is built on being very protective on who we let in the front door.
Okay.
You know, who we let in to play with my boys, who my wife lets in. You know, Matthew 7:6 says, don't throw pearls at swines. We're very sensitive. You know, in real estate, in the financial advisory world, there is this dynamic of, well, if you have enough people, even the ones that don't work out, you'll have a better chance of having some that do. But we're very sensitive to having one bad apple,
yeah.
one person whose values are not in alignment, one person whose work ethic is not present. And so we have a 5-person culture committee. At least 3 have to be present on the Zoom or call or meeting. And that is a part of the process where if they say no, that person can do $50 million a year, Tim. They could have the biggest brokerage in town or in the country. David Hoffman Realty doesn't have a seat for them. We might keep some type of relationship outside of the transaction, mm-hmm. outside of the business, but we can't work together. And so I think that's rare. And that'll be mentioned in the book too. Again, I try to show all the highs and lows. You know, the flight gets you to where you want to be, but there's some turbulence on the way. Mm-hmm. No one says there'll be no turbulence.
Yeah.
No one says this will be a flawless flight. They just say, good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Thank you for flying with X Airlines. You know, our final destination. They say the final destination. They don't promise what the journey is going to look like. And so what I try to do is have the best pilot and co-pilot, the best flight attendants. And when I say best, again, I don't mean the most experience always, although I want a pilot with a lot of experience. Someone who doesn't like to fly.
In that analogy,
but,
yes.
But I want the flight attendant who's going to be like, hey, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little scared too, but I will tell you why I'm not overly fearful because I know this plane's going to make it. And that pilot has this much experience and that co-pilot is paying attention and they always get a good night's sleep and they give you that peace. And so the culture committee doesn't let the pilot show up late. Because we don't hire that pilot. Mm-hmm. Our culture committee doesn't let the flight attendant not get a lot of sleep and seem more frazzled than me as a passenger who doesn't really like to fly. And so people ask all the time, how many agents do you want when you grow up? And my answer is, that's never been the question. The number of employees and teammates and colleagues, it's if God puts someone in my life, they're there for a reason. We're not seeking out people. And so, Tim, just like with my business, all of our marketing is to showcase the property in its best light. all of our marketing is to help someone who needs financing. And to be honest, most of our marketing goes to service projects in the community, which is another part of the culture. We don't market to get clients and we don't market to get staff. We're actually very protective of, God says, look, you've got a neighbor on each side. Go to them. Love your neighbor. You know, go to the people I helped you, introduced you to 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to share that about the culture committee that,
yeah, what, you know. Well, I'm curious what prompted you to form that committee. I think that's a...
It's a great question. It's because I used to hire everyone.
Okay.
You know, I would trust you if you said you had a friend who was in real estate because you're a dear friend and I know you. But they would be like, hey, David, I'm in real estate. I like people. You're in real estate. You like people. Like, I should join your firm and I want to do this, that, and the other. I'm going to change the world with you. And I really love relationships and I love God and I love everyone. I'm like, you get a job and you get a job. Like Oprah style, you get a job. So Tim, I was hiring everybody. Not bad people, but just people who are, their values
may not have been a fit.
They were not a right fit.
Yeah.
And so I said, look, I'm not going to be part of the process. If someone reaches out to me, I'm going to forward them to you. So culture committee meets them.
Okay.
And they need a unanimous yes. And if there's any concerns, if it's majority, but not unanimous, then it goes to a follow-up meeting with the same people. And then there's always one person that doesn't have to be on there. So there's no pressure, you know, if someone is sick or unavailable, but we need at least a majority. And we need unanimous of that majority that shows up. Then leadership has to say yes. But if culture committee says no, leadership doesn't even know about the person.
Yeah.
Because I used to say yes to everyone, Tim.
Okay.
And so then I'd be like, wow, you sell a lot of real estate, but your values are not in alignment. Wow, your values are all in alignment, but you have no interest in getting out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, David, how'd you miss it? And it's because as a kid, I didn't have any relationships, so I value all of them.
Yeah.
And so they were putting my life for a reason. It just may not be for marketplace.
The marketplace reason. So how do you pick who's on this culture committee? Again, I think this is a very interesting idea in the context of our podcast and previous episodes. So.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's an elected position, and it's probably time to open it up again. It's people of all walks of life. It's men, it's women, it's young, it's old. But they've all been with us no less than 2 years.
Okay.
Some 5, 6, 7 years. But they all have experience with us. You know, they're all great agents, but a better people. But it's not a production base.
Mm-hmm.
It's culture. So you were asking about culture.
A fit. Yeah.
They're a fit. They're the ones that we would want to magnify the company with. You know, we want, mm-hmm. if we can have 10 times as many of them, they show up early, they stay late. They put their family first. But when they show up for work, their client matters. And it's not about the transaction. I've seen all of them turn down a deal where it wasn't a win-win. Mm-hmm. I've seen all of them tell the buyer, don't make an offer. I've seen all of them tell the seller, that's not what needs to happen. Or I can't work with you. You're not respectful. So they've all walked the walk, Tim, working together for many years. We've actually had people on these calls, candidates, who have actually said, I'm not a good fit.
They get uncomfortable.
They get uncomfortable. That's a good problem,
that's a
right?
Good, yeah, selection criteria. They're like, I'm out.
That's happened a few times with good agents, with people that I know. Like for me, last thing I'll say about this is in the relationship, you need to meet people where they are. I've seen you do it. We have very similar values being in alignment, but we have different personality types. Yep. And I've seen you meet me where I am. And so in these interviews, I used to try to meet people where they are. The difference is, I can meet their communication style. You can meet their personality type, but you can't meet their heart.
Yeah.
And if the heart isn't in alignment, if you can't be a fountain to pour into them, they're going to be a drain that sucks you dry.
Yeah. I think it's in the context of a lot of topics and discussions we've had on this podcast before. That's really interesting idea to have a culture committee that really makes a decision as to who is and isn't a fit for an organization, because most organizations hire the person maybe based on their technical skills, maybe based on a relationship, maybe based on a burning need, like we got to get a person in this role and then figure out the cultural fit. And that can be a challenge in and of itself, as you know, from having done that prior to having this committee in place. So
I had a friend once, Tim, who said, can you imagine living with all decisions and all relationships being mutually exclusive for money?
Mm-hmm.
And so for example, if you felt like X was better for your child than Y, you did X regardless of money. Even if you had the money to do something, if A was a better decision, even though money could pay for B, you went with A. It's not always easy because the money is not always there. You needed the abundance. But again, if it was for money, we would just hire everyone with production. If it was about merely the experience during the transaction, we'd hire everyone with the best technical skills, like you said. But if it's about the relationship, it's about the bigger picture, it's about helping to show people who God really is, if it's about actually making more about them than us, they don't always know what they want to need. And so they need to be surrounded with people that are the experts. And so the expert is not the know-it-all. We have people that are very humble. They know what they know, but they know what they don't know. And so they don't fake it till they make it. These are all cliches in the industry. And so it's more of the long game. For the transaction, we would not have a culture committee. For the relationship, it's why I don't do the hiring.
Interesting. So I'm curious as we're talking about this, because I actually had a conversation with somebody earlier this week, the reconciling of culture and relationship and results. There are some organizations that are very results oriented at any cost, for lack of a better word. You know, it doesn't matter about the people. It doesn't matter about the cultural implications. It's just we're getting results, whether that's monetary, sales, whatever the result is. How do you see, because you've said a lot today, David, about a balance between those two things. So your profession, similar to my profession, is one that in many respects values just hire a bunch of people and kind of let it sort itself out. And you can get results that way. But there's that balance then of what type of culture have you created?
Yeah, definitely. In the real estate world, I use the house analogy. Mm-hmm. A lot more time is spent on the footers, on the foundation, on the crawl, and a lot less time on the aesthetics. I'll validate that with this. It takes weeks to pour the footings and to lay the foundation. And it takes hours, if not less than that, to put the most beautiful $100,000 countertops in, mm-hmm. to slide in the appliances, to lay the flooring on top of many levels of subflooring. If you have the right foundation, if people have been given love, if you give your kids love and they know you care, then you can tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Then you can give the candor. And so don't get wrong, there is accountability. Just like I was holding my boys accountable this morning to getting ready for school, I was holding my oldest accountable to doing his homework, and my youngest accountable to putting his shoes on and brushing his teeth. Because they know I love them, I'm not telling them they can't go on the street because I don't care. I'm telling them they can't go on the street because I do care. And so more time on the front end is laying the foundation with our group, Tim, of showing them that we care and we love. So when it comes to the truth and the candor, they're open to receive it.
Mm-hmm. So the balance is really not, you know, it's focused again back on the relationship and the culture first, yes, with the expectation and understanding that there still is a result that needs to be garnered.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else from the book? I like the title, and maybe we can take a minute to discuss
because
it's relationship over rules. And you can hear that a number of different ways, but your intent, as I understand it, is relationships over the rules, in essence,
yes,
that society places on us all.
Yeah, and it's funny, a couple of days ago, Tim, it's probably a little preemptive, but my agent emailed me with a question about the subtitle. It's a subtitle about the principles. And the reason he was asking me is because I guess he had a Google search set up, and I guess the book's available for pre-order, but there's no book cover, so I'm not telling people yet, although I guess I kind of did, but we're about 2 months out. But I sent it to my wife.
This podcast, yeah, if you'd like.
No, this is great. No, people could buy it, pre-order now. It'll be done in 2 months. But there is a copy of the back book cover online,
okay,
on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, whatever. And what it talks about is the different principles that I've learned. And so the long and the short of it is, I'll go through them real fast. One is your past does not define your purpose or dictate your potential. Everyone thinks, well, I'm new to this city. I can't build a real estate business or a financial services company, or I was abused, so I'm going to have to abuse. No, you can break the chains. Anything is possible. Find a way to say yes. As a kid, I was always told no, Tim. And now my goal is to find a way to say yes. And if you only focus on the people God places in your life, which is another principle, by the way, then you're already working with people that love you and trust you and respect you. They may not always need you in real estate or in financial services or in the marketplace or wherever you are. But some of my best friends go to churches I've never been to. Some of my close friends don't even have a strong relationship with God, but they're put in my life. And so we're able to help each other. The long and the short of the book is no matter where you came from and no matter where you're going, they're mutually exclusive. The relationships that God places in your life can change the world. He puts everyone in your life and my life to reach whatever your potential is. We always are seeking out the stranger down the block because this transaction's over and I need more clients. My marriage isn't having the best week. I'm not getting the love languages. I'm not getting what I expect. But that client, that gal, she's been really nice to me. And so your people are always seeking out strangers for that instant gratification, but the relationships in your life overrule those rules. And, you know, I grew up Jewish, Tim, probably the most foundational principle in the whole book is you don't have to be born knowing God to build a relationship with him. It's never too late as long as you're on this side. And I'm Jewish. And the rules say that I can't believe in Jesus. Mm-hmm. And the rules say this and the rules say that. That's all the world's rules. But I have a relationship with Jesus and I have in my heart and I do believe in God. And so I believe you can overrule those rules. As a kid, I had no relationships. And so people always say like, oh, your dad must have built a real estate company in Charlotte. Your grandpa must have had a real estate. How do you know all these people? How are you the relationship?
Machines.
Yeah. And how are you the relationship guy? I go on the road like, oh, David, you're the relationship guy. And I'm like, you know what? My goal in life is to be irrelevant. Like, what do you mean? I was like, my goal is that you value relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But the greatest gift I've gotten is, see, people think that adversity becomes your scarlet letter. People think the adversity you have faced as a child, Tim, or even last Tuesday, or even this morning, they feel like that is who you are. And then you get chains around your wrists and your ankles. But for me, that gave me the greatest and the clearest perspective that I'm grateful for everything. You know, I used to eat dog food as a kid in the basement because the cookies and bread and meat slices and fruit was all counted. I drank toilet water because the bath water made noise and I wasn't allowed to leave my room, but the toilet water was sedentary. And so when you realize you can live on dog food and toilet water, you have perspective. You don't need a lot. Mm-hmm. And so now in the transaction, I don't care about the commission. I don't care about the transaction. I don't think there's one person in my company that does. It's about the relationship because I never had them. And so someone says, oh, you're the relationship guy. Like you write a book on relationships. Of course you are. Yeah, it's because you might have had a lot of relationships. I didn't. So I'm grateful for that. Now I have a lot that I don't deserve. Someone else may have faced something even more dire. And so they think they can't accomplish what they can, Tim. And so that's the whole point of the book is I went through a whole process with writers and with agents. And my agent kept saying, I don't know if I can take you on. He deals with all these famous people and singers and TV stars and movie stars. And so I'm not just, we're all perfectly made and we're special in our own ways. But for me, my whole goal is like, look, like I'm not that special. If I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of sell myself to the writer and sell myself to the agent. I'll tell you, my writer is Robert Nolan. He wrote the book, I Can Only Imagine.
Oh,
it
yeah.
became a big movie yeah. and song.
Song.
And he wrote Michael W. Smith's memoirs last year about his relationship with his father. Both of those books are huge sellers. He has one of the top selling devotionals in the United States right now for men. And so those relationships, last thing I'll say is the book, even my agent said not too long ago, he's like, Dave, even the way the book came to life is you living relationships. The rules say that a Jew that knew no one from New York City should not be building a business and companies in Charlotte and writing a nationally published book. But the relationships in your life open doors that anything is possible. Because God has, the last thing I'll say, Tim, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Hopefully someone can relate, they listens. God can do whatever, but if he doesn't give us free will and give us choice, then good and true love don't exist. And so he needs to see that we're going to do everything with what he's given us. Then we have room to receive all his other blessings. And so making mistakes every day, failing morning, noon, and night, the day came where God said, okay, I'm going to put some people in your life now who know other people that you've known for years mm-hmm. that you didn't know that they're connected, unbeknownst to you, and we're going to get your story out to the world.
Yeah.
So I hope it encourages.
Well, and I think, you know, there's something to be said about you making yourself available for all that too in the chain of the energy of God's will in your life. So that's pretty powerful. There's also, which could be an interesting topic to explore, perhaps not today, but as I listen to you talk, David, I mean, so much of the culture that you've brought into your business is informed by the early years of your life and the adversity. And I think that's an interesting story because everybody's got a story. Some may not be as extreme as others, but there's not too many real.
And I know some of your story.
Smooth childhoods yeah. where everything just went perfectly well. But it's a really interesting topic to be explored at another time on how the upbringing of a leader informs the culture they create and the intentionality of that. Because what I heard you say today is that upbringing caused you to be very intentional about the culture you create in your business that emanates beyond your business. And it's something that you did not have, that you ultimately came to have a high level of appreciation for, that you have manifested a la relationships.
Last thing I'll say about this, Tim, because you're absolutely right, is twofold, two very quick stories. When I was moving to Charlotte in 2005, I was actually becoming a sports agent in DC, and I was actually technically the expert on the jock tax, J-O-C-K, jocks. And because I was an economist, and I was doing work on how athletes were taxed because they knew I loved sports, never good enough to play at the highest level, or I didn't really get to play a lot of organized sports, but I just loved watching it. And so I was supposed to speak at the sports and entertainment law conference, and my mom had just passed away. And so there's a lot there, but I was on the phone with my mom right before she passed. And I said, I'm going to come visit you. I had no idea how sick she was. I don't know if she knew. And then 3 weeks later, I got a call that she passed. And so my one regret in life is not saying goodbye to my mom. Open casket. I cried for days. Everyone says that. I don't mean grieve for days. I mean cried for days. When you don't have a second chance. And so I'm going to encourage everyone to have no regret. And the second part is when I was driving to Charlotte, because so I canceled a big talk, which was making me a sports agent. All these athletes loved me because I was fighting for them because it wasn't a popular thing to do. And I picked the walk over the talk. There was an MS walk the same day of a big talk I was supposed to give. And I felt like it was my small way of saying, you know what, I'm going to stop being selfish, because I was being selfish because as a kid, I felt like so much was taken from me.
Yeah.
And so I just want to leave you with encouraging people that when I had a chance to just keep the chains on and be spiteful and mad that so much was taken from me, I was taken away from my mom when she got sick by giving birth to me. There's so much to the story, and that's what led to a lot. But I want to encourage people that no matter what they face, like you said, Tim, as a child or even in a relationship today, I want to encourage them that they're more than whatever they're facing. I want to encourage them that they can break the chains and they can overcome and they can get above it. They can step over the offense, not allow it, not enable it, but get past it. And a lot of times, when someone is facing that kind of adversity, I really truly believe, I did not know this because I did not believe in God for so many years. I really believe that's the devil saying, whoa, I can't let he or she do what God has planned for them. And so I just want to encourage people that sometimes the robber will break into your house because you got a nice house with a lot of good stuff inside of it.
Yeah.
You know, robbers not stupid. They might be bad, but they're not stupid. So when you're discouraged and disheartened and you're facing adversity, a lot of times that's so that you can have the perspective of everything that is coming and be ready for it and break the chains. I want to encourage people to break the chains and realize what's possible.
Well, I really appreciate the time together today, David. I appreciate it's an honor to call you friend. And I know we had a little bit of a chat a few days before we recorded this podcast, but I also love that we didn't have an agenda and God moved through this message today and through you. So thank you very much for being with us here today. We'll wrap this episode with a big thank you to you. And we'll put some information in the show notes about the book and your organization. And again, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Tim. It's an honor.
Absolutely.